Thank you. Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Nancy C., a compulsive overeater. And I realize I don't know where she's from, so I apologize for that. Welcome, Nancy C.
Thank you, Chris M. Thank you, everyone. Welcome. My name's Nancy C., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Ann Arbor, Michigan, just south of some of you. And I know Canada's big, and I always think of it as just Canada. So I apologize for that up front. There's some people that have texted me that are trying to get in from the chat rooms or for the waiting room. So if somebody could let those people in, that would be swell. I really thank the Central Ontario Intergroup and Pat and Jessica and Chris, everyone here doing service tonight for asking me to speak. And never had to speak for 30 or been asked to speak for 30 minutes. So we'll see how this goes. And it'll help if I start my timer. But I do want to say that what I have to say today is not for me. It's really from my higher power. And I'd like to take a minute and just center myself and center the group and know that by ourselves, we're nothing. And with him who has everything, we are everything. So what am I here to talk about tonight? I'm here to talk about what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now, right? And I think I would like to just qualify really quick. I have been recovered since October 18th of 2020. I've been in the OA rooms since August of 2011, so you can do the math. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees who have sponsees, so I do go to a regular home group meeting and do attend meetings probably every day and make this fellowship part of my daily life because it is a design for living, and I get my heartbeat from this fellowship, which brings me closer to my higher power and brings me closer to a new way of living that is beyond my wildest dreams. Was it always like that? Oh God, no. I was thinking there were a whole bunch of things that I was thinking of as I was getting ready to talk tonight. But one of the most important ones is, you know, it's Sunday night at, you know, almost 8 o'clock, 7:30. And what was it like? Oh my God. Do any of you guys remember Sunday nights? Oh, what diet was I going to start Monday? Monday, the new day, right? I was eating whatever I had in my cabinets that weren't on that new diet, right? I had been shopping and bought, you know, whatever it was that I needed to have for this new diet. And if it required journaling or something like that, I had my new Spanky notebooks and my colored pens and everything. And I was all ready to do this perfectly. Till 10 o'clock on Monday, it was all over. But I can remember the Sunday nights that the hope, the despair that it is going to be different. This time I have found nirvana. I have found the magic bullet. And you know, tonight I'm sitting here talking to my fellows that I don't know hardly any of you, haven't met any of you in person. Thank God for Zoom and the pandemic. I know the pandemic is terrible and we're all tired of having it go on, but it saved my life because it let me do this. And I might not know any of you by name. Some of you I know by name, some by sight, but I could pick up the phone and talk to any of you today and know that you understood me because we all talk the language of the heart. And we all have the common compulsion to do something that normal people don't do with food, whether it be shoving it down our throats, throwing it up our throats, running 50 miles to get rid of it, taking pills, doing whatever it is that we needed to do because we weren't normal eaters, right? We're compulsive overeaters with food behaviors that are just not understood by the normal people in this world. You know, today I stand here and, or I sit here, I'm a miracle, just like everyone else sitting in this room. Is there anybody new here tonight, or relatively new to OA? Okay, I see one. Anybody else? Welcome. You are welcome, both of you. You are in the right place. And please put your name in the chat and let people reach out to you. And please reach out to people who put you in the chat, because you're the most important person in this room. And I talk about a power greater than myself that I choose to call God, that has really given me the opportunity to do what you guys did. He gave me that opportunity a year and a half ago, and I just showed up, took somebody's hand, and completely transformed my life. The other thing I was thinking of this morning was, you know, what is different? There's absolutely nothing different in my life. Okay, I'm retired now, but there's absolutely nothing different in my life, but everything is different. My perception has changed. I've had what the big book calls a spiritual awakening, a psychic change, a spiritual experience, a rearrangement of myself, but I am not the same inside. I have been totally rearranged, and God has opened my heart to be of service, to want to be of service and want to be part of this fellowship, and realize that I'm not the center of the universe. And by God, I was always the center of the universe. You know, growing up, I come from a family of six, Irish, Catholic, Italian, so really nice, very low-tempered, even-keeled people, never got excited about anything. But life revolved around food, right? And I've heard it say in the rooms that, you know, my life was dictated, my memories are all revolve around food. And I was like, that's crazy. And then the more I start thinking about it, oh yeah, you know, I remember every Christmas and what we ate and what we did and, you know, who brought what to Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving, what we always had at Thanksgiving dinner when we went on vacation. I don't know about you guys, but my vacation was defined by how long it was and all the special food that I would get at the boardwalk. I always went to the Eastern Shore in the United States, and there was special ice creams, there were special French fries and other things that I had to have everything before I left my vacation, right? People were an afterthought. All I cared about was the food, because I never belonged anywhere. I never felt comfortable in my own skin, and I didn't really care about anybody else. People didn't care about me. I had this just schizophrenic idea that everyone was out to get me, or, you know, they didn't like me. So the only solace I found was eating food. Food gave me that ease and comfort that, oh, it'll be all right. So I would always turn to that. And I learned early on how to get food. You know, I would get into the baking cabinet. I would play sick so that I could stay home. And my mother always had some social thing she was out at. And I would like cook stuff for myself, clean it all up. I'm sure the house smelled like whatever, you know, whatever I was cooking, but think that nobody noticed, that I would just eat myself to death. But I was always sick every Friday. I was never in school. I was always eating myself to death. And it made me feel better. And I got that, as the big book says, frosty emotional appeal all the time. Honey, you're so cute. Just lose some weight. Or the negative thing of, I have to take you to the chubby store, and nobody, the rest of my other five brothers and sisters got to go to normal pick out clothes. And I always had to go down to 8th Street in Northwest Washington to go get my clothes and get fat shoes that I could never get. I'm dating myself, except for it was really cool when I was in high school to have suede saddle shoes. And I couldn't get that because my feet were so fat. So I had to get the leather ones. And, you know, they tried to give me special laces and things to make me feel better. But I always was identified out. And the more that I identified out, the more I ate because it was the only thing that made me feel better. I did find liquor when I was in high school, which kind of gave me another chasing another feeling of just checking out, of not having to conform, not having to be part of, just to not be in my own skin. Now I look back when I really look honestly at my eating history, and really my liquor was just liquid sugar. I just drank that and didn't eat. So I had periods of where I wasn't really gaining all that weight, but I was consuming a lot of sugar. To when I got sober in 1985, you know, I say that I'm a double winner, but I have been abstinent or been free of alcohol since 1985 or for 38 years. But I just switch right back to food. I could eat all sorts of candy and double portions of everything because I just needed that sugar in my body. And I'm saying sugar because I have realized that I have a disease and I have an allergy and I am allergic to sugar. Once I put it in my body, I can't stop from wanting more of it. And if I try to stop, I can't stop from starting again because I have this double whammy or this phenomenon of craving that makes me go back for more. And I want to talk about two other things before I get into really what happened. I never had any friends. I had acquaintances. I had people that I used that they could get me what I needed, be it food, get me into the right groups because I needed to belong, get me to the right food, get me to the right teachers, get me to pass something, get me to cheat on exams. I was a big liar, cheater, stealer. I'm surprised that I can put two sentences together with how I got my way through school. But anything somebody could give me, I would latch on to you till you couldn't give it to me anymore. And then I was off to somebody else and just really spit on you in the curb and moved on. Never really thought about the wreckage I was leaving in my past. And that MO continued on and on through college. The same thing happened. I left so many friends who would really be very good friends that today I've made amends to several of them and we're fast friends again. But a lot of them, you know, I still know I left. And though making amends to them, we did part as friends and we will never be what we could have been if I had been different and didn't have this disease of compulsive overeating. My God, I think it's really critical in my story to talk about God as I understand him. Being a Catholic and being brought up Catholic, I was going to be a nun because that was the only thing that was going to save me because I had so many black marks. Priest used to come into our eighth grade class and show a milk bottle and that was white. And then he'd put like black dots on it and go, this, you know, every time you sin, it gets black with mold. And when it turns black, you know, you're screwed. It's pretty much what he said. So I knew I was never going to get to heaven, but I tried. And so I would go to mass with my dad every morning and I would, you know, get buddy-buddy with the nuns and with the priests. Okay, so I'm a lesbian, didn't realize it then. And so there was probably another reason that I wanted to be friends with all the nuns, but that's another part of my story. But I knew I was never going to make it, but I would sit in church begging God, make me thin, please. I didn't want to give up any food, just make me thin. I didn't want to change anything, just make me thin so people would accept me because thin is in. Thin is what would make me be normal. But I had no idea I couldn't stop eating. Food was my God, really. Even though I'd sit in church and go, God, make me thin. God, give me a pony. God, make my parents not fight. And when none of that stuff happened, what kind of God was that? You know, but I had the judgmental and I was already out. So that's why I wasn't getting the pony. That's why I wasn't getting thin. That's why I wasn't getting anything. And fast forward through, you know, a lot of career where I was very much in control, very much self-centered, very much you do what I want to make me look good. And I don't care what it costs you. I don't care if you have to work all weekend and you've got a family and young kids. You're going to do what I want you to do because I need to look good. And then give you any credit? Credit was all mine. All the glory was mine. The work was you. I still love to get all the glory without having to do the work. And that doesn't work in this program. I have learned that the hard way, that I really have to put in hard work to make this program work. So I left a lot of wreckage in my past, and I had really no friends. I had a family that loved me, but I wouldn't be able to tell you that you did. They did, because I always thought they were talking about me, making fun of me, laughing behind my back, and just always identified out because I had a mental illness. I mean, a sick mind can't fix a sick mind. I was chasing something I could never get. If I just got that one bite that I got when I was 6 years old that I felt okay, I never got it again, but God, I chased it, and I chased it more, and I chased it more. And the more I chased it, the worse it got, that the food just took over. It was my master. It was my God. It was my everything. It was the solution to my problems, but it wasn't my problem, and I always thought it was. I tried every diet. I tried to control everything. You know, any diet you can think of, any other measure like acupuncture, therapy, hypnosis, the whole thing. I tried everything, and it worked till it didn't. You know how you'd go on a diet and you'd be like, oh, good, you'd lose like 15 pounds. And then you'd be like, okay, now I can have a good weekend because I was good. And then all of a sudden you're 18 pounds in 2 weeks. So it was just one step forward, two steps back, whatever it is. I never caught up. I was always gaining incrementally more and more weight. And the binges became more frequent and more close together, where to the point where I just couldn't stop binging. In 2011, I did find Overeaters Anonymous. I was fired from my job, and because I had spent so much time blaming other people for why I wasn't getting all the accolades I should, really realizing now that I didn't deserve any of those accolades. I was devastated because that was the only one thing that made me feel like I had purpose, was my job, my title, where I appeared, where I was quoted, where I got asked to speak. All of that exterior, I'm large and in charge and I am somebody, but with nothing on the inside, right? So when I lost that, I had nothing. I had a wife who I really had just used as a maid. She would get my cleaning ready to go on international trips. She would take care of the dogs that she didn't even want, but I wanted dogs, but was never here to see them. Just totally using people, spitting them up and moving forward, and not even knowing there was another way to live because it was all about me. So in 2011, somebody suggested I go to Overeaters Anonymous, and I was like, are you kidding? There's no way I'm going to a group called Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, forget it. And they said, just give it a try. So long story short, I got there and I had an axe to grind, right? I had just been fired from a job, and I was going to prove to them that I could be just fine without them. It was a devastating part of my life, probably the darkest days of my life. So somebody told me to get a nutritionist and get a food plan, which I did. I took that up. I followed that to the T. I would go to two meetings a week, talk about how I was following my food plan. If somebody told me that there were steps on the wall, I didn't know it. I just knew that I was losing weight. And you would say, yeah, I'm following my food plan, and let me report on my week and how crappy everyone else is being to me, or how things aren't working, or how things are working, but never really talking about the program of recovery designed in this book or in this program. And in 2000, and I incrementally, after that first year, I surrendered 65 pounds. I looked great. I had become an exercise machine. So I also, you know, picked up that compulsion a little bit. And people stopped noticing, you know, all of a sudden it wasn't, oh my God, what did you do? And, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I started taking the food back in a little bite here and a little bite there. Pretty soon I had a little bite everywhere. And 60 of the 65 pounds were on in the next 8 years. And so I had a sponsor who I love dearly. She's my best friend, but we never talked about program. I would call her every day religiously and submit my food with no intention of eating one thing on that food plan and switch the conversation to something social so that we didn't have to talk about program and she wouldn't ask me about my food. And I just kept getting bigger and bigger. And like every month I would go in and go, oh, I ate. And they go, oh, keep coming back. So I really had diet with group support in that it's okay, honey. We understand, you know, this is a hard thing not to eat right. Till I got to the point where I was binging every day uncontrollably. I would go to bed with a stomach ache and feel sick to my stomach and crying in my pillow, God, I can't do this anymore. And please take this from me. And the next morning on my way to work, I would be in line at Starbucks getting 2 chocolate chip cookies. And then I was off to the races because what happens when you eat something, you screwed the whole day. So why not start tomorrow, right? So I would eat and even eat more. And I couldn't stop. And it was going on and on. Got a new therapist. You know, how many therapists did I go through that I was never honest with about my eating? But she said, call this number. And she gave me the number of a very strong big book phone meeting called A Vision.
Sorry, Nancy, I muted you a little bit. Sorry.
Okay, am I good? Do I have to start all over? No. I got a therapist who suggested that I call into A Vision for You. And I was like, I told you I'm done. I am done with OA. It does not work. I called that phone line and I heard something I had never heard before. I heard people who really firmly believed that I had a disease. I understood for the first time that I was allergic to certain substances that I put in my body. Oh my God, it was like solved everything, or I was like, this is the reason. And I also heard people happy, joyous, and free who had recovered and were neutral around food. What the hell is neutral around food? Now I'm a compulsive overeater, right? And I'm going to be neutral around food. I've admitted that. And no, those don't go together. But there was something in that room and I wanted what those people had. So this is where my new God comes in. He just said, show up and stay where you are. Just do what they're telling you to do. I was told to find a sponsor. I found a sponsor who told me I had to figure out what I was allergic to, put those down, go get a food plan from a nutritionist that didn't have any of those things in it. And I was like, okay. And we had a little bannering about definition of no sugar, but I did what she wanted. And I also did whatever she told me to do. God gave me the grace to just say, show up and get through this. And I got through the steps of described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous within 6 weeks. And I haven't looked back because I did exactly what the book says. And that's the book is designed and written to go through 12 steps. It's not to go through 2 steps or not to go through 4 steps or a cafeteria style where I like these, I don't really like that. But the first requirement is I had to put down the food. And it says that in the doctor's opinion. I don't know how familiar people are with the book, but in the doctor's opinion, it says to be able to do this, you have to put down the food first so that you can start working on this program of recovery. So I really had to take a look at myself. And, you know, the first 3 steps, I had to figure out this God thing. I had to admit Nancy was not in charge. I had nothing to do with my life. I had made a wreck of it because I kept trying to control everything and give everyone an opinion of me that nobody had, nobody, you know, should have, and nobody did have, but I thought they should have, that I was powerless over food and that my life was unmanageable. That unmanageability thing was really hard, but I realized that I needed to just say, I can't. And that was my first step, that I really had to look for something to arrest this disease that I had. Made a decision to trust it. And I was like, what am I trusting? What is this God? And through those lines, you know, the whole purpose of meetings is to kind of get experience, strength, and hope from people. I found somebody who talked about God and learning to find a God that suits them. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. I've got this judge God up here and I'm not going to be able to do all of this. She suggested that I come up with a best attributes of a dad. You know, what would I want in a dad? That he loves me, holds my hand, never talks back, has my back, teaches me things, protects me, lets me sit in his lap. All of those things, I came up with a list, put it on an index card. And she said, you say that every day, say my God is, and list that off and see if that doesn't make a change. And I had a transformation there that gave me a God that truly loved me and wanted the best for me, that got me into step three to make the decision to turn my will and my life over to God. So I got myself right with God, then I understood him then. Then I went through steps four through seven and got right with myself, really taking a look that I had messed everyone else up. The world wasn't wrong to Nancy. I really had been wrong to the world. And I learned where I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fearful. And usually it was fear that drove me to do everything, because people didn't understand me. I didn't want anybody to know. I didn't know what I was talking about, what I was doing. So I just pushed back, right? And so very selfish and very dishonest, and looking at all that stuff and realizing that. And then realizing that these defects I was doing to protect my inherent instincts, natural instincts of security and love and wanting to be part of a community and part of relationships and my security of self and in society, that they were really things that I just needed to switch around and turn into assets and do the opposite. That's really easy to say, because it was really hard to do, and I still work on that every day.
Nancy, 5 minutes.
Okay, thanks. Then going back to other people and saying, you know, I messed up and this is on me. It has nothing to do with what you did, and really clearing my side of the street got me right with my fellows in step 8 and 9. And then really practice these principles in all my affairs is in 10, 11, and 12 by doing a daily review or a daily 10 step anytime that I've done something wrong. You know, when I did steps 1 through 9, I cleared up an avenue to God that I've never had before, where I have a direct conduit to somebody who controls my life. He's my God. He's my employer. I'm his employee. And if I can remember that I have a purpose, his purpose, to be of maximum service to my fellows and to him, my days go much better. And I do that by, when I mess it up, when I start taking control and need to do a 10 step, I do that. And then an 11th step, by really taking a look at what I've done well and what I haven't done so well every day, and really go to God and ask him to help me get better every day. My life is just like unbelievable. It keeps opening up and it keeps getting better. And you know the best part? I don't even talk about food anymore. And I know that's why I came in, and that's a nice asset to this program. But it is the design for living that lets me live in step 12, where I do service and I work with other fellows to help them recover and help them stay recovered, that the miracle, we're all miracles. And this is the miracle that happens when we work these steps. And who would have thought that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob could come up with this book that is just amazing in 164 pages that changes people's lives and just transforms them from the scrap heap to a life that beyond their wildest dreams, to something that they couldn't even feel was something that they could live with. My life is completely different today. My coordinates, everything else is the same, But by God, I get out of bed and thank God every day for giving me another breath and having me on this side of the grass and giving me an opportunity to do his work. When I can stay in my own lane and realize that I have my role and not worry about other people's roles, you know, when I start worrying about other people's roles, I get these tapes going. Oh, it's my, I call it my Norman. I have my Nancy and my Norman, but they don't like you. Look, they just looked funny at you. They're laughing at you. Oh my God. I'll get the tapes going. And all of a sudden I am in deep poop because I think I'm controlling what everyone else thinks of me. And you know what? Doesn't matter because I don't have any control over that. And if I can just remember, I have a purpose today. God's got a purpose for me and I just need to execute it. God, my days go really great. And I get to meet cool people like you. I get to call cool people like you. And I like get to live beyond my wildest dreams. I want to end with a quote. I hope that this was helpful to somebody. And I hope somebody got something out of this. But and he sold himself short. I don't know if people are familiar with that in the stories in the big book. But it says, these last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would have not enjoyed if I had continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years outside to live. The last part of my life has had purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in living daily. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I've stopped tilting at windmills and instead I have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weathered friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for who I am. I am over my AA years. I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendship, courage, self-assurance, and honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust, where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others, from serving them as I can. And with that, I pass. Thanks.